Leonard Slatkin and the St. Louis Symphony with Claude Debussy's Sacred and Profane Dances.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and you're listening to WHFR out of Henry Ford Community College. We thank you for choosing WHFR as your classical connection. If you would like to learn more about what's happening in and around WHFR, programming changes, where we might be doing appearances, and so on and so forth, then we'd love you to be a part of our WHFR Loyal Listener mailing list. It is a free opportunity for you to receive right to your doorstep, the WHFR Loyal Listener. It is our bi-monthly newsletter that shares all of the latest happenings of WHFR, both out and about in town or programming changes, music reviews, and so much more. And best of all, it's free. Simply give us a call, 313-845-9842. Leave your name, full address, and phone number, and I will put you on the WHFR mailing list just like that.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. We're bringing you non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College.
Welcome to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I'm Susan Morrell, and today we are talking with a very special guest, Poulin Modai. He is the coordinator of the Youth Division at PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Welcome to WHFR.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is our show for March 8th, 2008. If you could share with us and with our audience here some information about PETA. I think most people who are aware of PETA think of PETA as an animal rights group.
Right. Well, PETA was founded in 1980, and we are an organization dedicated to establishing and defending the rights of all animals. PETA operates under the simple principle that animals are not ours to eat, to wear, experiment on, or use for entertainment. And so PETA educates policymakers and the public about animal abuse and promotes kind treatment of animals. The division that I work in is called PETA2.com. And that's where we work high school and college students to provide a little bit more unique opportunity and kind of a more targeted approach to appeal to young people about animal rights issues and to encourage students to speak out, educate their friends, that sort of thing.
How would you define animal rights?
Well, people who support animal rights believe that animals are not ours to use for food, clothing, entertainment, experimentation, or any other purpose, and that animals deserve consideration of their best interests regardless of whether they're cute or useful to humans or endangered or regardless of whether any human cares about them at all. just as a mentally challenged human has rights, even if he or she is not cute or useful or, you know, particularly if we're fond of them or care about them at all. It's basically saying that animals should have the right to equal consideration of their interests. And so that would mean, for example, a dog most certainly does have an interest in not having pain inflicted on him or her unnecessarily, and we're therefore obligated to take that interest into consideration and respect the dog's right to not have pain unnecessarily inflicted upon him or her. However, animals don't always have the same rights as humans because their interests aren't always the same as ours. And so, for example, a dog doesn't have an interest in voting, therefore doesn't have the right to vote because that right would be essentially meaningless to a dog, much in the same way that a child would also have, you know, doesn't really need the right to vote because they really wouldn't have anything to do with it. They would basically be meaningless to them.
So I think what you're saying, my interpretation of that statement is that animals actually have sensory feelings. They have feelings, and actually some animals even have emotions.
Oh, right. It's a scientific fact. It's a psychological fact that animals do feel pain. They do suffer. They do have emotions. When they are torn away from their families, they suffer, they feel pain, they have increased, measurable rates of stress. These things are facts for animals on factory farms and laboratories, on fur farms, and suffering for the entertainment industry. And anyone who visits PETA.org, which is our homepage, can definitely see videos that attest to this fact, read documentation from experts in animal behavior, I think at a more fundamental level, anyone who's ever been around a dog or a cat knows that these animals do have emotions. They do suffer and feel pain, and simply because other animals like chickens, pigs, cows, animals used for other industries, simply because we're not around them in the same type of capacity, that doesn't mean that those animals aren't individuals in that same type of way.
Okay, when you're talking, I want to explore this concept of emotions in animals a little bit. When you say emotions in animals, are you talking mostly about domesticated pets like cats and dogs, or does that extend to, how far does that extend?
Honestly, since my background isn't in animal behavior, I wouldn't be able to say from an expert opinion, but I do know that I've read many studies that have shown that it's not just dogs and cats. Again, as I mentioned, I think we are able to, a lay person who doesn't have a background in animal behavior, I think we do recognize dogs and cats as having emotions because we're around them. We're able to kind of pick up their preferences, their likes, their dislikes, and how they react to different types of situations. If we were to be around other animals, for example, chickens, pigs, cows, rats, mice, all sorts of other animals, if we were to be around them in the same way, I have no doubt from all the things that I've read and also just from watching videos and kind of doing my own observations that these animals do have emotions. They want to be with their families. They feel loneliness. They feel frustration. They definitely get stressed when they're in artificial environments that don't provide them things that are natural to them. One of the most well-known examples, at least in terms of the factory farming industry, would be how pigs actually have their teeth cut out and their tails clipped and their ears cut, because that is considered when they tend to bite at each other as a sign of frustration and stress. Because they're so deprived of natural stimulation. Pigs are very smart animals. They need a lot of stimulation, and when they're denied that, they start going crazy and biting as a symptom of that craziness. So I think that alone is just one example, and there are, you know, hundreds more out there.
Okay, so even if you have a pet horse or some other pet, that pet is feeling emotions from your interaction with it, or independent of your or interactions with it.
Right, definitely.
Well, I think that's a very important concept to realize when you're dealing with animals and pets, and when you're talking about animal rights, because a lot of people say, well, it's just a cat, it's just a dog, but it's actually a being. It's a little being. It's a little entity. It's a life.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
It's a life that's important, at least to itself.
Right. Exactly. I mean, and the entire premise of animal rights is not what they can do for us necessarily, but just the fact that, like you're saying, they are individuals. They are beings who have their own lives, their own thought processes, their own needs, and if we are imposing this cruelty upon them, that is completely depriving them of their natural desires to be free, to be with their families, to enjoy fresh air, to play around in the dirt, to get exercise, and so on.
We're interfering with their lives,
right?
Somehow, and it may not be to their benefit. They may have good days and bad days, just like people, right?
Right, definitely.
And we don't necessarily know why they're having a bad day. And they may not be feeling well. It could be that simple. They could have a headache, right? So I went to your website. That's PETA.org for our listeners. And I urge everybody to check out their website. It's just a fountain of information about animals and the animal rights movement and what PETA has going on within the animal community. And I noticed you had a pledge to end animal homelessness.
Right.
Could you tell us more about that?
Sure. Well, we actually we have a new campaign called the ABC campaign, which stands for Animal Birth Control. Kind of sounds like a kind of a provocative kind of tagline to what we're doing, but basically we're here to say enough is enough. We have to end the overpopulation crisis. We have to refuse to buy animals, always adopt them, and encourage people to practice their ABCs, which stands for Animal Birth Control. Essentially, breeders and pet stores kill shelter animals' chances. Millions of unwanted animals sit in shelters just dying for a caring person who have their resources and time to adopt them. And to breed even more animals when so many already exist without homes is shameful, in our opinion. So the pledge is encouraging people to always spay and neuter animals, to never buy from a breeder or any store, but instead to adopt animals, because there are 6 to 8 million unwanted dogs and cats who enter U.S. animal shelters every year, and most of those animals are unfortunately put to death because there's simply not enough good homes for them.
I mean, that's a terribly sad commentary on our society that we have not resolved that problem. I'm appalled when you think of that. And if you ever go to a shelter and look and see the adorable little lost pets that are sitting there in the cages, you know, they're just crying out for a home, for some affection, for some love. So I think it's a terribly sad commentary that we haven't put more attention to resolving this problem in our society.
Right. And then, I mean, there's, even if you're looking at recent news, there's, you know, the Westminster Dog Show and the American Kennel Club, you know, heavily promoting breeding, you know, of purebred animals and not taking responsibility for the fact that, you know, that there is this huge overpopulation crisis and that shelters are overflowing with animals who are loving animals who need good homes. And we shouldn't be, you know, breeding animals continually when there are already animals who will be euthanized simply because somebody is breeding an animal or buying one. And in terms of spaying and neutering, spaying one female dog can prevent 67,000 births in 6 years, and spaying one female cat can prevent 420,000 births in just 7 years. So it really is something that adds up at a pretty tremendous rate, and that's why it is really important on an individual level for anyone who has a dog or cat to please spay and neuter and to anyone who's looking to get a companion animal to definitely go to a shelter, because these animals desperately need our help, and buying from a pet store, buying from a breeder is literally just a death sentence for an animal at a shelter.
When you talk about a pledge to end animal homelessness, is it a pledge on the part of the PETA organization, or are you asking the public to each person take the pledge?
It's a little bit of both. As I mentioned, the ABC campaign, the Animal Birth Control campaign, is relatively newer as an official campaign to PETA. So in that sense, we are kind of reorganizing and relaunching a lot of our initiatives around this issue. But the pledge itself is a tangible, physical thing that anyone can go to our website and sign this petition, which basically means that you, as an individual, will commit to spaying or neutering your animals and to only adopting from shelters, to never buy from any pet stores or breeders.
Okay, so that's a very good concept. But what do you say to people who say, well, you know, I want a purebred dog, I want a purebred cat, I want a certain kind, and one that looks a certain way and that behaves a certain way. I don't want a mongrel, so to speak.
Right. Well, I mean, it's interesting, but I mean, it is just literally the case that every kitten and puppy born is a virtual death sentence for another unfortunate animal in a shelter. So every last one of the millions of deaths of animals at animal shelters and in the streets could have been prevented by spaying and neutering and by adopting animals from a shelter. So it's not that I think that anyone is maliciously breeding an animal in order to kill an animal in a shelter. However, that is the reality, and I would just encourage anyone who cares about animals to address the reality that this is what will happen. And if somebody is truly interested in caring about an animal and helping an animal, they should go to their shelter. There are a lot of purebred animals who end up in shelters simply because people move away and can't take care of their animal, or they don't have time to keep up with the commitment, which is a pretty significant commitment. So I would definitely encourage people to look online, look on at your local shelter, and if you are interested in taking an animal into your home, to please do that as kind of a mutually beneficial thing, not something that is only kind of like a novelty. You know, these animals aren't toys, they're not decorations, they're not alarm systems. They are living flesh and blood, they do have feelings, and it's time that we do respect what their rights are to live a life free from suffering. And I think as human beings, as people who are capable of understanding these types of arguments and following this type of logic, I think it's pretty important that we use our obligations and our responsibilities to act in the best interest of these animals.
Well, I agree. I'm doing my part. I'm adopting. I'm adopting strays and pets from shelters and those kinds of things, and they're perfectly wonderful. They
right.
love me just as much as any other pet would. I want to talk a little bit about the effect of cold weather on cats and dogs, because we're here in Michigan, and you know, we're in the middle of a very cold, snowy winter here, and I know there's bad weather across the country, and I know PETA has some ideas for protecting cats and dogs during the cold weather.
Right. Well, basically, animals may have fur coats, but that doesn't make them immune to the cold. So they can suffer from exposure and frostbite just like people can. Cold weather is extra hard on outside dogs who often go without adequate food, water, shelter, or medical care. So all animals should be brought inside when the temperature dips below freezing. Puppies and kittens are elderly animals, small animals, and dogs with short hair, including pointers, beagles, pit bulls, Rottweilers, and Dobermans, and they're all especially susceptible to the cold and should be kept inside. And, you know, all animals should be given extra food rations in the wintertime since they're burning more calories in order to keep warm. They also need to be dewormed, since worms can rob the dogs of vital nutrients. And, I mean, dogs are required by law to have adequate shelter, so if anyone sees a dog who has inadequate shelter or none at all, they should definitely report that to the authorities, because that call can save a life.
Sure. So that's a law. Is that a nationwide law that a dog should be protected by shelter during the winter? Is that...
I think the laws vary slightly from according to various jurisdictions. So I'm not honestly totally sure about Michigan. But definitely, I mean, it is illegal to be cruel to animals, to dogs, and to not give them shelter and adequate food is something that should be reported to the authorities.
And I presume that goes for other animals, too.
Right.
Okay. All right. So just remember, folks, let the pets in during the cold weather. And I guess that kind of goes along with being sensitive to animals, to their feelings, and that they are going to feel heat. They are going to feel cold. They are going to feel pain. And one of the things I also noticed on your website was that you have an animal sensitivity course.
Right. We actually kind of launched that a little bit more prominently around the time of the Michael Vick case, when that was gaining a lot of attention. We actually wrote to Michael Vick when he was first charged with fighting dogs, and he agreed to come to our headquarters in Virginia to take an 8-hour course in empathy. And it was clear to us from the beginning that anyone who can hang, electrocute, shoot, and slam dogs into the ground might never have been taught the fact that it's wrong to abuse defenseless animals. We knew that it was a long shot, but we knew that Michael Vick talks to kids and is a pretty influential person, so we thought we could try at least to teach him what to say to them, and maybe some extra. So we, with this Developing Empathy for Animals course, we have a few aspects of it. The first is just to educate people about animal protection and what PETA does. We focus primarily on the case study of Hurricane Katrina, where, as you may remember and many listeners may remember, people were forced to flee with essentially no plan for how to take care of their animals. They were forced to leave them there. Personally, I spent some time down in the New Orleans area after Hurricane Katrina helping at the shelters where there were all these dogs and cats and other animals being brought in from people who would literally go house to house and break into houses with the owner's permission to save these animals, and who would get animals who had been let loose and were around the streets simply because their guardians didn't know what to do in this emergency situation. So we focus on that at first. Then, as we were talking a little bit earlier about animals' emotions and the need to empathize with them, we talk a bit about the scientific basis for empathy towards animals. Then we talk a bit about a program that we have, an educational program that's aimed at younger people called Share the World, so we go through that. There's a lunch break, of course, which is an all-vegan lunch, so no animal products in that. And then talking a little bit more about dogs and how dogs suffer, what their needs are. That was a little bit more specifically for the Michael Vick case. That is something that can be adapted based on who the attendees are of this particular seminar. Then we also talk about the connections between cruelty to animals and how that affects kind of what our mindset is in terms of violence towards other people. The FBI knows, for example, that violence towards animals is a warning sign of violence towards people. It's, everyone from, including Jeffrey Dahmer, started by, practicing cutting up animals and being cruel to animals before then working on to human victims. So we think that's one of the strongest points of the curriculum, and even independently of that, is to encourage people to think about the connections with all forms of violence and all victims. Then we also talk about Christianity and compassion, because a lot of people do tend to see the Bible and the biblical concept of dominion as an excuse for exploiting animals, whereas many people, rather than seeing it as an excuse to exploit animals, see it as the dominion that we have to to be responsible, to have some sort of obligation to look after the best interest of animals. So that's a really interesting section that we talk about. And we also talk about just everyday choices that people can make in terms of what they eat, what they wear, the products they buy, things like adopting animals from shelters, and what the needs are of animals, and how, as consumers, we can really make choices that are compassionate. So as you can tell, there's a lot going on there, but we think it's important to give people that overview to really start thinking about how to be kind to animals, because I think it's becoming increasingly clear that animal rights and the interest of animals is an important issue in our society, but many people just don't know where to start in terms of thinking how this is, how we can, at least at a foundational level, start thinking about these issues.
Poulin, this animal sensitivity course, is this a one-day course?
Currently it's a one-day course. I believe it was the Michael Vick course, for example, was an 8-hour course in empathy that did include an exam afterwards and distribution of recommended reading and supplemental class materials. So we do have all of that kinds of things, and we also, as you know, for people who are not simply going to come to our office and take a course, we also have an entire web element where we have this course, where we have all of our information, all our videos, recipes, information about safeguarding dogs and cats during cold weather. We have all of that on our website, which is just PETA.org.
Okay, and then is there a charge for this course?
No, there's no charge. And in fact, especially for the more high-profile individuals, for example, Michael Vick and now Pedro Martinez, who's, associated with cockfighting, we are more than happy to offer these courses for free.
Okay. And you mentioned you personally were helping with the pets, the displaced pets and animals after Hurricane Katrina. How do you think that this disaster affected the animals you came in contact with?
I think that was a pretty clear example of how animals do feel pain. They do suffer. They feel fear. They feel confusion. If you try to put yourself in the position of any human who was down in the New Orleans area during Hurricane Katrina, you can begin to imagine the confusion that they felt. But then if you think of animals who weren't able to understand what was going on. They couldn't hear news alerts. They couldn't talk to anybody to kind of get the story about what was happening, where they were going, when their guardians would come back. I mean, you can imagine how just devastating that would be emotionally to highly social animals like dogs and cats who were just forced to be abandoned. So it was very clear when I was working with those animals that they were very afraid, very confused, and then in addition to that, it was also, very clear that they were hungry, that they were very stressed out, and it's probably one of, if not the worst things that I've ever seen in my life, and hopefully that unfortunate circumstance can show people that we do need a better plan for future disasters, and we have been pressuring the government locally and nationally to come up with plans that are better for disaster preparation when it comes to companion animals.
Well, I think it was one of the worst points in the history of the country, that event, and I was not able to be there in person, but just from what I saw on television, it was horrendous for everyone, for the people, for the displaced people. I mean, it was a terribly, terribly sad and horrific event for the country, I think, and of course for the animals. I felt very, very badly that there wasn't a plan. there wasn't a very good plan to help them to escape and to survive. But I'm so glad that so many animal rights groups went down there to help, and I know a lot of the animal rights groups right here from Michigan went down and brought pets back to Michigan for adoption to the rescue, right?
Right.
Thank you for being there. I mean, I'm glad you were one of the people who helped out. My thoughts are with you, and actually I'm sure you helped in rescuing a number of animals just by being there.
Right, yeah, definitely. And it's not something I'll ever forget, you know, seeing, especially there's one huge shelter, there were just, you know, thousands of animals there and more being brought in all the time, and to, you know, to at least feed and walk the dogs and give them water and clean the cages and, you know, all of that stuff also. It's just, it gives a better sense of just how horribly animals can be neglected and how much they do need us to speak out for them. And, you know, just to look at animals in shelters and know that we can prevent this type of loneliness for them and the horrible rates of euthanasia simply by adopting those animals and not buying them, not breeding them, and spaying and neutering the animals who we do have, simply so that we can provide for the animals in shelters.
Yes, well, that was a major crisis mode down there after Hurricane Katrina. You are listening to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I'm Susan Morell, and today we are talking with Pulin Modai, who is a coordinator of the youth division at PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And we're just discussing a number of issues that PETA is involved with. And one of the things that has been in the news in the past few years is Chinese fur farms. I saw a few things on television that a lot of the fur coats that are coming to the Western world, including the United States, the fur coats are actually made from cats and dogs. I mean, I was horrified.
Right.
Absolutely horrified when I learned that.
Well, I mean, something that most people don't realize is that China has no animal protection laws. So for all the products that we get from them, for all the importing we do of fur and leather products, which are, you know, one of the top sources of those products for the U.S. is from China. But in fact, PETA recently conducted an undercover investigation into the Chinese dog and cat fur trade and found that millions of dogs and cats are bludgeoned, hanged, bled to death, and strangled with wire nooses so that their fur and their hides can be turned into fur coats, fur trim garments, and many types of leather goods. And because the products are then deliberately often mislabeled as fur and leather from other species other than dogs and cats, those products often come to the U.S. and are sold in the U.S. As other, you know, non-dog or cat items, when in fact that is the true source of these products.
Well, it's horrendous. And so what is PETA's position on this Chinese fur trade? I mean, obviously you're against it, but how do we prevent this, or what are we doing to prevent this, our country and our retail trade?
Well, we are working with some companies to, I mean, as many companies as possible and as many individuals as possible. We want them to boycott the fur industry and the leather industries altogether, because it is often very hard to tell which animals specifically are used. And from our perspective, you know, whether the animal being killed is a dog or a cat or a mink, fox, rabbit, or any other animal, when you're talking about bludgeoning them, hanging them, bleeding them to death, and depriving them of everything that's natural to them, that is just wrong, you know, for a product of vanity, when there are plenty of alternatives that exist that are both functional and fashionable without contributing to this cruelty. But we are also working with companies and sending them letters, sending them our investigations to raise awareness at the very least about how China specifically has no animal protection laws, and that you know, there's no excuse to wear fur, there's no excuse to be wearing the skins of any animals, but at the very least from a corporate perspective, the Chinese fur industry is a good first step to encouraging these corporations to have some sort of accountability for how animals are treated, because you know, most Americans know that if you were to skin a dog or cat and try to wear their skin deliberately in the U.S., people would be outraged. So simply because there's that disconnect with the source being from China, it shouldn't be any more acceptable. And in fact, it's not any more acceptable. The animals suffer exactly the same way, regardless of their species and regardless of if they're being killed on a farm in the United States or China.
What about fake fur, things that are sold with a label that says fake fur? Is that a safe bet, you think?
Honestly, there's been some controversy behind that as well. There's been some evidence that fake fur has been mislabeled as fake when in fact it was real. So I would say, if possible, avoid it. If not, definitely visit our website, furisdead.com. You can learn a little bit more about which designers we've been working with, which companies which have committed to only using fur-free designs. So companies, for example, like Ralph Lauren, like J. Crew, Wet Seal, Forever 21, there are many brands which have committed to only using fake fur. And so those are generally a safer bet than something that you might not be so sure about. And these are designers and companies that are available everywhere. There's absolutely no excuse to be wearing any real fur when there are so many alternatives out there.
Well, that is true. And I know that PETA sponsors a number of celebrity fur campaigns.
Right.
Are there any that have gone on recently that you can share with us?
Well, Eva Mendez is a pretty popular actress who recently shot an anti-fur ad with us. We've also worked with Pamela Anderson, male models, including Steve-O, Tommy Lee, and Dennis Rodman. And from the PETA 2 perspective, actually, there's a very popular youth brand of models called the Suicide Girls, who are notorious for having these provocative, sexy ads where they have tattoos. So we worked with them to shoot an exclusive series of ads under our Ink Not Mink and our I'd Rather Go Naked Than Wear Fur ad slogan series. And those just launched exclusively on the PETA 2 MySpace page, which is just myspace.com/PETA2. We're going to be adding several new photos a day, about two new photos a day for the next few weeks. So people can go check that out. They're all, pretty tastefully done, very very sexy, very empowering, very eye-catching, and we're hoping a lot of new people will come to our page, learn about the fur industry. We've already seen a lot of evidence that it's been a successful campaign, and we're sure that it'll only get more popular as we roll out the entire series of ads.
Well, when you do a celebrity fur campaign, are the celebrities donating their time to PETA for the cause? And is PETA actually producing the spot or the photograph?
It varies a bit. The celebrities always do it for free. We don't pay them to do that. We do often have to pay for, a photographer or studio or any of that type of element for it, although sometimes photographers and other professionals will donate their time to us and their services to us, for which we're always grateful. If anyone just visits furisdead.com, you can see all of our ads on there. I think it's definitely been one of the most successful things that we've done, because as much as I like to say I'm exciting, and as much as I'm sure you know your show is a great show, that if somebody like Pamela Anderson or Tommy Lee speaks up, it does tend to have a more broad reach. And what our goal is to reach, people who are a bit harder to get to, people who don't tune into, fine programs such as yours or visit websites like PETA.org on a more regular basis. We really want to come up with eye-catching, thought-provoking, interesting campaigns to reach out to new people, and we think that celebrities are a really great way to do that. We found a lot of success from working with celebrities.
Well, I agree. And then another thing that I want to talk about a little bit is this incident that we had last year with the pet food contamination from China. What is PETA's position on that?
Well, honestly, it's not my area of expertise, so I would I do have some information, but I'd also just want to preface it by encouraging everyone to visit helpinganimals.com, which is our website to encourage people to learn about companion animals and all the things they can do to help dogs and cats. But we are calling on IAMS and Menu Foods to stop testing dog and cat food on animals. One of our investigations into a lab that had IAMS and Menu Foods as its top two consumers documented dogs who had gone crazy from intense confinement in barren steel cages and cement cells, dogs who had left been left on filthy paint chip floors after chunks of muscle had been hacked from their thighs, dogs whose vocal cords had been severed, and horribly sick dogs and cats who languished in their cages and were left to suffer without veterinary care. So, you know, the American people do count on the FDA to ensure that pet food is safe, but, you know, also the FDA has violated that trust, as is evidenced by the growing body of dead dogs and cats from these contamination instances, and it's not too much to ask IAMS and Menu Foods to stop testing their dog and cat food on animals, because clearly that hasn't proved safe, and we're also asking that the FDA, in the best interest of consumers, you know, seeks out non-lethal, safe ways of testing these types of foods without going through animal testing.
Well, I agree. It shouldn't be necessary to torture an animal to find out if it likes the food.
Right.
You know, just give him the food. If he likes it, he likes it. If he doesn't, he doesn't, right?
Right. And, I mean, we are, as I mentioned, we're asking people to boycott IAMS and other pet foods that are still being tested on animals. But the alternatives do include Pet Guard, Natural Balance, Newman's Own, Organics, and other foods that are not tested on animals. People can visit helpinganimals.com for more information on that. Or they can always email us, and we'd be happy to provide a list.
You are listening to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I'm Susan Morrell, and we're talking today with Poulin Modi from PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Before we close today, I wish you'd give us a little more contact information. I know about your website. Let's give your website. If there's a phone number, how can people get involved with your organization in terms of volunteering or any other way they can get involved? And what can pet lovers do? Let's say if you're not a member of PETA, what can you do as a pet lover to somehow improve the lives of animals?
Sure. Well, first of all, to address the last question, what any pet lover can do is definitely visit PETA.org. That's PETA.org. You can sign up for e-news alerts about all the campaigns we have going on. You can participate in action alerts targeted towards companies who do support various forms of cruelty to animals, whether that's the fact that they sell fur or that they test on animals. We also regularly put up action alerts based on cruelty cases. For example, you know, if a dog is mistreated, we'll want to make sure that the prosecutor pushes for the strongest punishment possible. So that's something we'd put up on our website and send out to members. So at PETA.org, people can also sign up to get active through our activist network. If they're interested in participating a little bit more actively also, there are opportunities to order leaflets, stickers, cruelty-free shopping guides, a guide for companies that don't test their pet foods on animals. We have all those types of resources available. And people can also email info@PETA.org if they'd like information, or call 757-622-PETA. That's 757-622-PETA. And so any of those are, you know, that's several different options for people to contact us. Also, since I know you're located on a college campus, for those students who might be a little bit younger, it's still in college or, you know, high school or even younger, we encourage people to visit PETA2.com, which is PETA and the number 2.com. rather than having an activist network on PETA2.com, we have what's called a street team, which is basically a network of about 300,000 registered users who are actively speaking out for animals, whether that's using our stickers and leaflets or doing demonstrations or sharing some of this information in the really unique ways that we have to offer on websites like MySpace and Facebook and their own blogs and doing school presentations and that sort of thing, which is a bit more unique to the capacity that students have to reach out to their peers. And people can visit PETA2.com and email PETA2@PETA2.com if they'd like more information about how to get involved with the youth programs that we do have. So I think there's a lot of ways to speak up for animals, and you know, it doesn't require anyone to, you know, identify themselves maybe as the traditional concept of an activist. I think there are a lot of really simple things that any individual can do from a consumer perspective about buying cruelty-free products, whether that's, you know, trying vegetarian foods a bit more, whether that's adopting animals from a shelter, whether that's buying pet foods that aren't tested on animals. There are a lot of different ways to make an individual difference. And then again, as I mentioned, there are the more formal, I guess, traditional activism types of ideas that we have, whether that's writing letters, making phone calls, attending demonstrations, or requesting information to do leafleting in any sort of public place or setting up a table or anything like that. So the possibilities basically are limitless, and we'll be happy to offer any of that information for free. We don't want the cost to distract people from the fact that we're here to make your lives easier in terms of helping animals so that the end result is that we reduce the amount of animal suffering in the world.
But PETA is a nonprofit organization, and you're what, composed mostly of volunteers?
We're a nonprofit organization with about 1.8 million members and supporters around the world. So while we are the largest animal rights organization in the world, our funding is, you know, it's not from government grants. It's not from any large sources like that. It's essentially from donors, listeners maybe who give their $16 annual membership fee, people who like a particular program that we have and sometimes, you know, want to pay for the cost of something, for example, like printing our leaflets about spaying and neutering. So sometimes we'll get people who donate specifically for things like that. Sometimes people just give us larger donations. I don't want to downplay the fact that, you know, any organization does need a budget and funding to continue, but I just wanted to make it clear that what our main interest is that people help animals. And so if any listener is interested in helping animals, I definitely encourage them to visit PETA.org, see if there's anything that really they find compelling, and to feel free to contact us. We'd be happy to send any free materials to inspire and educate other people.
Okay, well, it sounds great, and that's a very, very worthy cause, and I'm impressed with all your work on behalf of animal rights in the world and raising consciousness and bringing to light all of these important issues that we need to be thinking more about. Because if you're a pet lover, and we all are, you want their lives to be good, right? You want to share a good life with them, and you want to love them and share your love with them. And so anything that we can do to improve their lives will make us happy and will benefit us too. Well, I want to thank you, Poulin Modani from PETA, for joining us here today on Pet Lovers Lane. And I encourage our listeners to contact PETA at the website, PETA.org. And stay tuned to Pet Lovers Lane, and we're going to have a short break here, and we'll come back with our pet calendar for March 2008. Thanks, Poulin.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you, pets and pet lovers, for staying tuned to WHFR 89.3 on your FM dial. We are making waves. I am Susan Morell, and this is our calendar for March 2008 for Pet Lovers Lane. I just wanted to let everyone know that there is a pet store in Frankenmuth called Raining Cats and Dogs, located on Main Street, and they have taken extra initiative in helping homeless animals. The store itself fosters older cats, saving them from euthanasia in shelters, while building up their confidence and letting them know they are loved. I think that's a very worthy cause. And since February 2007, Raining Cats and Dogs has adopted out 53 cats. So if you are interested in adopting an older cat, go to Frankenmuth or give them a call at 989-652-8100. The AKC, that's the American Kennel Club, has a very special announcement about Metro Detroit, and that is that the three most popular breeds of dogs are the German Shepherd, the Yorkie, and the Lab. They're very, very popular here in the Motor City. And according to the Humane Society, 25 to 30% of the animals in shelters are purebred dogs. So if you want to adopt a purebred dog from a shelter, your cost will be much, much lower, and you will be rescuing a homeless animal, and you will be most likely saving that animal from euthanasia. Michigan Humane Society website is michiganhumane.org, O-R-G. So I highly recommend, if you are interested in a purebred, instead of spending hundreds and even thousands of dollars on purchasing a dog or a cat from a breeder or a pet store, check out the shelters, local shelters. They're all over the state of Michigan. Most likely, you can put in a request for a certain type of dog or cat, a certain look. You're looking for a certain look. Or you could go there and look on a regular basis and see what pet you see and fall in love with, because I know you will. And there's one more bit of news this month on Pet Lovers Lane, and that is that cats, if you have a cat as a pet, it decreases the possibility of heart disease by 40% in cat owners. It decreases the possibility of a stroke by 30%. I have cats at home, so I hope that works for me. So if you have health issues and you don't have a cat, perhaps you should consider getting a cat, because you know what cats do? They help you to relax. Cats are into R&R big time. They know how to nap, they know how to sleep, they know how to chill out, and they know how to relax. So I highly, highly recommend that. And to continue on with our calendar for March 2008 here on Pet Lovers Lane, March is Adopt a Rescued Guinea Pig Month. If you're interested in a guinea pig as a pet, this is the month to do it. March 1st was National Pig Day, so I hope you had the chance to honor a pig on March 1st. They say pigs are very intelligent animals. From March 2nd through the 8th is National Professional Pet Sitters Week, so we have to honor our pet sitters because they're performing a very worthy service. And March 16th to the 22nd is National Poison Prevention Week for pets. Now check that out, because don't leave things lying around your house, because pets can gobble up things that might not be good for them. And then we have another number of events around the city that are taking place and around the state. Greyheart Greyhound Rescue and Adoption of Michigan, they're having a meet and greet that will take place Sunday, March 9th. From 12 noon until 4 p.m. at the Petco in East Point on East Point Road. And the website is greatheart.org, O-R-G. On Saturday, March 15th, if you would like to have a photo with the Easter Bunny, Greyhound Expressions Rescue is sponsoring that event from 11 to 4 p.m. at the Pet Emporium in Ann Arbor. That's on Ann Arbor Saline Road. The cost is $7 to $12. And the website is greyhoundexpressions.org, O-R-G. The phone number is 734-929-6533, and the date again is Saturday, March 15th. And the Michigan Humane Society of Monroe is having its annual auction for the animals also on Saturday, March 15th at 6 p.m. And that's on Telegraph Road at Leroy's Hall. And the tickets are $50, and a table of 10 is $400. So that sounds like a fun event. In Bay City, there's a St. Patrick's Day Parade sponsored by A Few Steps From Home Animal Rescue. That will take place on Sunday, March 16th at 2 p.m. And you can check out the website at St. Pat Parade, baycity.org, O-R-G. We have Greyhounds of Eastern Michigan. They're sponsoring a meet and greet on Saturday, March 23rd, from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the Petco in Taylor, and that's on Eureka Road. That will be, again, Saturday, March 23rd. So all very, very worthy causes and events sponsored by our very many rescue groups here in the state of Michigan. There's lots and lots of other events going on at Petco and PetSmart and all of the different animal groups, the Dearborn Animal Shelter. I'm sure if you go to their website, Dearborn Animal Shelter, right here in the city of Dearborn, they always have things going on too. I thank you for joining me for another session of Pet Lovers Lane. We're right here on WHFR, the only station making waves. Please join us on the second Saturday of every month at 10 a.m. right here on WHFR for Pet Lovers Lane. And remember, if you go to our website, whfr.fm, download the show, Pet Lovers Lane, from the website, whfr.fm, and check out the website and find out what's going on WHFR with Pet Lovers Lane and with all of our other wonderful talk shows right here on the only station making waves. And I'm Susan Morrell, and I'll see you next time right here on WHFR, the only station making waves.
Listening to 89.3 WHFR Dearborn, we're bringing you non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College. Good morning. My name is Bill Keith. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning as we're dealing with more snow. Boy, are we ever going to get rid of all this snow? Well, we'll see. Hopefully soon. As we get into March, I start thinking about spring and wanting to enjoy all the nice weather that spring brings. But right now we're dealing with all the unpredictability of winter-spring mix. Right now, we'll start off with some music from local songwriter Billy Brandt. He's more known for his work with Jill Jack, playing guitar for her for many, many years, and also for his work with his band Grievous Angel. He came out with a solo album at the end of 2007 called The Mission Band. And here's a song from that. This is called Move On Down the Line. You're listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM. We're making waves.
circles, and you passed that way before. Ain't no use in you pretending, doesn't matter anymore. Burning